London Column. This is Peter Watson once again presenting a weekly radio digest of items headlined or modest, but all selected for your interest and entertainment from the worldwide services of the BBC. London Column. This week, we join in celebrations marking the centenary of the first submarine cable in the world. We hear a report from Tokyo of Royal Air Force participation in the war in Korea, and we hear the principal spokesman of all Britain's workers proclaiming their anti-communist solidarity. Uppermost in the mind of every citizen of every free and democratic nation is Korea. And that subject, with all its implications, has dominated the sessions at Brighton of the 82nd Annual Congress of the Trade Unions of Britain. More than 900 delegates from 126 unions and representing some 8 million British workers heard their president, Mr. Herbert Bullock, set the keynote of the Congress in his opening speech.
We are once again facing all the tragic possibilities of general war. Each nation is preparing for an awful contingency which none of them want. Those who are inspired by authoritarian and totalitarian ideas are inciting insurrectionary disturbances and armed conflicts at various points in the world, while at the same time they are running a phony peace campaign in an attempt to lull to sleep the people of other nations. We are too near the grim results engineered by Hitler and his gangster accomplices to be taken in by the antics of those troglodytes behind the Iron Curtain and their stooges, catspaws, and deluded supporters on this side of the Iron Curtain.
Mr. Bullock reaffirmed the Trade Union Congress's support to the United Nations and added that doubts of its effectiveness, doubts arising from Soviet Russia's misuse of the veto, had now been dispelled.
Our doubts have been set at rest by the Security Council's action in Korea and by the response accorded to its call for armed forces to be placed at its disposal by the member states. But as our hopes of the United Nations' determination to act have risen, so rises also our responsibility as a nation to sustain that action. As an organized movement of great power and influence within the nation, we share that responsibility.
As vivid evidence that Britain's responsibility to the United Nations is accepted, that obligations are eagerly discharged, as evidence of our solidarity, here are voices from Tokyo, voices of personnel of the 88th Flying Boat Squadron of the Royal Air Force, whose acting commanding officer, Flight Lieutenant Kendall, and one of his colleagues, are giving an airman's eye view of Korean War to our reporter, Bernard Forbes.
Here at a slipway from which the Sunderlands are operating, I have just been discussing with some of the pilots here the type of patrol work they are engaged on. Flight Lieutenant Kendall from Leamington Spa, I understand you are acting CO here at the moment. How long has the squadron been operating from Japan?
We've been here now approximately 6 weeks altogether.
And is it correct that you came from Hong Kong?
Yes, that is correct. We came from Hong Kong.
And is the squadron still based on Hong Kong?
No, we're now based in Japan here. And do our main servicing back in Hong Kong.
I see. And could you describe the type of operation the squadron is engaged on just now?
Our job here is 12-hour anti-shipping patrols by night off the west coast of Korea. We work directly under the American Navy and receive our orders from Tokyo via Scotty the Baird, who is our RAF liaison officer up there. We hope we are doing a good job of work here, and I've been told that it is greatly appreciated by the Americans.
Thank you.
Now, Flying Officer Douche of Newmarket, Suffolk, was flying last night and was trying to get some sleep when I arrived here this morning. But here he is to describe a very successful operation last night.
Well, we took off dusk last evening, and we headed for the Yellow Sea area off the Korean coast. We arrived in our patrol area as darkness fell. It was a beautiful night last night. The moon was out, and we knew we were in for a most pleasant trip. Our job is to make radar searches of certain areas in the Yellow Sea and report any radar contacts we may find of shipping in the vicinity. We were lucky last night. We picked up several contacts. These were reported immediately to the Navy, who, we are assured, investigate the contacts and take any necessary action. Our patrol, we were on patrol, I suppose, for 8 hours last night. One particular contact I can remember, the moonlight was so bright we could actually see the radar contact, which is very reassuring to know that what our radar operator tells us is in actual fact down there below. And this information was very quickly passed back to base.
Thank you very much, flying officer.
But we're going back now from the modern magic of radar, with all its grim warlike applications, to its ancestor, by way of radio, as it were, to its predecessor in communications of 100 years ago. It was just 100 years ago that the very first submarine cable link was made between Dover and Calais. And to mark this centenary, Britain's Postmaster General the other day opened a special exhibition at London's Science Museum. Our reporter Audrey Russell was there and saw the Postmaster General, Mr. Ness Edwards, give a formal occasion an unorthodox twist.
Sir, in the ordinary way, it would be proper for me to make a declaration. I do not propose to adopt the orthodox method of declaring this exhibition open. I propose that this message should come to you via the submarine cable and, first of all, go all around the world. I am sending the message around the world relating to this exhibition, and now it is off.
The cable has now been put into the transmitter, and it actually has gone off. Now, while we're waiting for it to go round the world, I'm going to read out the cable route through which the message will automatically be sent and see if I can get all the places in before it comes in. Well, now, it goes from London to Porthcurno, Cornwall, then to Fayal, the Azores, Halifax, Nova Scotia, Montreal, Banff, Vancouver, Fanning Island, Fiji, Norfolk Island, Southport, Sydney, Adelaide, Perth, Cocos, Batavia, Singapore, Penang, Colombo, then from there to Seychelles, Aden. I see somebody here with a stopwatch in his hand, so we should see exactly how long it takes. From Aden to Port Sudan, Sudan to Alexandria, Malta, Gibraltar, then to Portugal, and my goodness, here it is. It's got to Porthcurno and to London. You can just hear it coming back again into this room.
Flash, flash, flash. Round the world. With this message, I open the Submarine Cable Centenary Exhibition, London. Ness Edwards, Postmaster General.
And so the exhibition opens with a feat of sending the cable round the world in 53.6 seconds, a feat that would have surprised and no doubt delighted the pioneers of 100 years ago.
And now for our first script, this week from guest London colonist Tom Fairley. Tom?
100 years ago. Science is wonderful, I suppose. But who wants to send messages all round the world in 53 seconds anyway? It always seems to me to be the bad news that travels fastest. And there's no particular virtue in speed for speed's sake. Everything is too quick nowadays. No sooner are the words out of the mouth before everybody, everywhere, knows all about it. And then it's too late to change your mind. And what's more, people hear it from your own lips, and that makes it even more difficult to change your mind. You know what pride is. One of the troublesome things about all this speed of communication is that it becomes difficult for a man to make up his own mind. He gets so many facts, opinions, and ideas pumped into him per minute, it's no wonder he's bewildered. I suppose science is wonderful, and that it has brought many benefits to mankind. But sometimes I wonder. I don't wonder, though, about Mr. Bullock's speech to the British Trades Union Congress. Here is an Englishman, representing many millions of his countrymen, saying that the working people of this country wholeheartedly support the action taken by the Security Council of the United Nations to oppose the attack on South Korea. This is good news traveling fast. And there is no question that Mr. Bullock speaks for everyone in this country, leaving out the lunatic fringe, of course. But it was no lunatic fringe that spoke to you from Japan. These young fellows in the RAF seem to be on the job all right. This electrical device called radar is too complicated for me to understand. Sending messages along a cable I can just get. Life gets more complicated. Maybe I should have been born 100 years ago. Goodbye.
Thank you, Tom. And it's goodbye, too, from this edition of London Column, a radio digest produced by Stephen Eckard, presented by Peter Watson, and which came to you in the North American service of the BBC.
London Column, a transcribed program. And this is the British Broadcasting Corporation.